opened with Benny's Big Band. And before that, Helen Forrest sang Lazy River, February 1941 Columbia recording. Benny Goodman on the Swing Era. To take us to the bottom of the hour, here's BG with some Paganini, Swinging Caprice 24. Let's catch our breath now with a reminder you're listening to The Swing Era. I'm your host, Bud Pearson. If you have a comment or request, by all means, email us at swingera@earthlink.net. That's S-W-I-N-G-E-R-A at earthlink.net. Back to the Swing Era, the year is 1941, and here's Benny Goodman with some Irving Berlin. Thank you.
I travel to be where you are. How far is the journey from here to a star? And if you ever left me, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?
I want a zoot suit with the reed pleat, with the drape shape and the stuff cuff to look sharp enough to see my Sunday gal. I want a reeve sleeve with a ribe stripe and a rare square, so the guys will stare when they see me strutting with my Sunday sow. I want to look keen, so my dream will say, you don't look like the same beau so keen that she'll scream. Here comes my walking rainbow, make a zoot suit with the reed pleat, with the drape shape and a stuffed cuff to look sharp enough to see my Sunday gal.
Gems by Benny Goodman on the Swing Era. Last heard Mel Powell's arrangement of the January 1942 pop tune, A Zoot Suit. Remember them? A zoot suit with a reet pleat and a drape shape with a stuffed cuff. Art Lund sang it, and we also heard Benny's clarinet, Lou McGarity's trombone, and Mel's piano. And before that, from June 1941, a minor swing classic not heard too often, Tuesday at 10, a Skippy Martin composition and arrangement with Benny, Lou, and Mel soloing. Tuesday at 10. And kicking off the set, Benny with a gem composed by Irving Berlin, and I suspect arranged by Eddie Sauter, How Deep Is the Ocean? B.G. and Peggy Lee in fine form. Peggy had only been with the band about 2 months and was developing rapidly. Of course, with Benny's clarinet and the last licks by drummer Big Sid Catlett. The King of Swing on the Swing Era.
Thank you.
Lucky April shower. It was the most convenient door. He found $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, the rain continued for an hour.
Thank you.
You heard it on the Swing Era. Last up, Benny Goodman and the band blazing through Mel Powell's composition and arrangement of Mission to Moscow, a July 1942 killer featuring Benny's clarinet and Mel's piano. And in the middle of the stack, Swing Era pro Helen Forrest sang the old tune, I Found a $1 Million Baby in a 5-and-10-cent store. What was a 5-and-10-cent store, you ask? I'll tell you later. This recording from May 1941. And kicking off the last set, a rare September 1941 alternate take of The Earl, composed and arranged by Mel Powell, and featuring his piano in a Heinz groove. Mel, a piano genius, joined Goodman in June 1941 at the age of 18. He wrote this as a tribute to his idol, Earl Hines. The alto was Clint Neagley and the clarinet Benny. The Earl, and you heard it, on the Swing Era.
Warm. the winter weather, so the two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter or finer. When it's nice and cold, I can hold my baby closer to me and collect the kisses that are due me. I love the winter weather, 'cause I got my love to keep me warm.
I love the winter weather, so the two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter, finer. When it's nice and cold, I can hold my baby closer to me and collect the kisses that I do me. I love the winter weather, 'cause I got my love to keep me warm.
On the swing era, one of only a couple of times when Peggy Lee and Art Lund got together to sing for Benny, this one, the November 1941 Winter Weather, with some McGarity trombone as well. And leading off the last set, an instrumental, as they used to call them, an instrumental titled Opus Local 802, composed by Benny and arranged by Fletcher Henderson. This, a December 1939 gem featuring Benny, Ziggy, and the bass of Artie Bernstein. That's it. So many records in so little time, but we'll trek back to the record vault next Saturday for more discs. Till then, this is your host, Bud Pearson, hoping you've enjoyed the King of Swing, Benny Goodman, and his orchestra. If you did, join us next week when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. See you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District. Online at kcea.org.
Listening nightly to our favorite show, radio. Oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again, radio. I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Coming up on today's program, it's Detectives, Adventure with Charlie Chan in Eye of the Buddha Ruby. But first, let's join Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. Barry Craig was one of the few detective radio series that had separate versions of it broadcast from both coasts. NBC produced the program from its New York studios from 1951 to 1954, then moved the program to Hollywood for a continued airing on NBC from 1954 to 1955. William Gargan, who also played the better-known television and radio detective Martin Kane, was the voice of New York private detective Barry Craig, while Ralph Bell portrayed his associate, Lieutenant Travis Rogers. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, in The Gossip Columnist. First broadcast October of 1951. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
I wanted to read you my leave for tomorrow's column. But at the door. Hold the line, Barry, while I see who it is.
Don't answer that, Mike. Stay
with
the door.
Oh. You, look, I told you it's no use coming here. You're just wasting your time. My life's too short.
My transcription. Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, starring William Gargan.
Barry Craig speaking. It was one of those nights. I was sitting in my office with my feet hooked on the corner of my desk, trying to whip up some enthusiasm over an assignment to bodyguard a couple of tin coffee pots at the Long Island wedding when the telephone rang. I let it ring a few times before I reached out and snagged it off its hook. After all, when they're that anxious, they can be mighty worthwhile. Yeah, who's this?
Al White from the Chronicle. Remember me?
Oh, Al White, sure. How's the gossip column racket these days?
Warming up. I got a chore for you.
I'll bet you have.
Meaning what?
I've been reading that column of yours. Those cracks you've been making about Larry Slade throwing the big fight, they can't have made him very happy. I hear he's looking for you.
Yeah, so do I. I need a bodyguard.
You keep printing that Slade took a dive and you're more likely to need an undertaker.
I was right about it, wasn't I? I even called around.
Sometimes there's something better to be than ripe.
Such as?
Alive. Something you're not likely to be if you keep needling Slade. He's big and sensitive.
My heart bleeds for him. Look, do you want this job or not?
All right, Al. Where do I start guarding the body?
The Casa Daily Bar. Midnight.
It wasn't the kind of case I'd like, but a private detective is like a doctor or a lawyer. He can't always pick and choose. Anyway, a few minutes short of midnight, I parked the car outside the Casa Daily. It was an old white frame building that Ace Daily had converted into a plush boob trap. One of those joints where if they don't get your roll with the fancy prices at the bar, they got back rooms all rigged up with roulette wheels and crap tables where they do. I was holding down the bar with an elbow, squinting through the fog of blue-gray smoke when my client, Al White, walked in.
Waiting long?
Not very.
Seen Ace Daly?
Yeah, he went in the game room a little while ago.
Larry Slade with him?
Champ? No, why?
Just a hunch. He'll be here, too, before the night's over. Daly's in the game room now, huh?
Why the interest in Ace Daly? I thought you were after Slade's hide.
Maybe I'm after both of them.
You think Ace had a hand in fixing that fight?
Yeah, and tonight I'm looking for proof. Any objection?
Sure skin, if you like to wear it with holes in it.
That's what I'm paying you to prevent.
Maybe we better make this one cash in advance.
Can't you trust me?
Oh, sure. I just don't want to have to go to the trouble of suing your estate to get my money.
Oh, very funny.
Hey, wait a minute. You must read tea leaves.
Huh?
Don't look now, but your old friend, the ex-champ, just came in.
Is he heading this way?
No, he's going on through into the gaming war.
Good.
What's good about it?
I had a tip Slade would be showing up for the payoff tonight. It settled him. He dumped the fight and Daly paid him to do it.
You still haven't got any proof of a payoff.
With a little luck, we might even get that.
What are you going to do, follow Slade in?
Not yet. Give him a minute or two head start. He won't go direct to Daly's office. He'll probably waste a couple of minutes looking around in the gaming room just to make sure he isn't being followed. Now, if we time it right, we may catch him in the act. And if we do, I'll have the biggest story of the year.
I only hope you live to write it.
I'll write it. Don't you worry about me.
All right, then. Don't worry about me. I only hope that I live to read it. We stayed at the bar, finished our drink, and listened while a tinny five-piece combo did unmentionable things to a popular ballad. Then Al White dropped a handful of silver on the bar and nodded he was ready. I led the way out of the bar to the disguised entrance of the roulette room. The door was presided over by a tuxedoed man with a broken nose. We stepped into a small vestibule, waited while he closed the door behind us. Then another door opened, and we stepped into the game room. A low buzz of conversation, spiced with the click of roulette balls, rolled out toward us. A dozen or more people were huddled around a huge roulette layout in the center. On the far side, a hot crap game was in session. Neither Ace nor Slade was in sight, so we ambled past a bank of slot machines toward a door marked private. From behind it, we could hear the sound of someone laughing.
Ready? All right, let's go.
And may your marriage be as happy as you are beautiful, my dear.
Hold it, Judge. We got company. Something just crawled out of the woodwork.
Something was wrong. Instead of a payoff, it looked like a party. Lifting a champagne glass with Ace Daly and Slade was the most gorgeous redhead I'd ever seen. And a tall, distinguished white-haired man was just proposing a toast. It wasn't what we'd figured to find. But Al White didn't let that stop him. He walked right in like the life of the party. Or maybe the death of it.
Hello, Larry. Evening, folks.
I've been looking for you, White. I'm gonna knock
you... Easy, champ, easy. My client doesn't like to be crowded.
Make it easy on yourself and you keep at it.
Cut it out, champ.
He's got it coming. I'm going
to...
Okay. Okay, Ace.
Yo, White. On your way.
Daly, you could lose a lot of customers talking to them that way.
I didn't send for you. Get out.
Ace, who is this man?
Yeah, Ace. Why don't you introduce us? I'm Al White, Mr. Dare. I write a column for the Chronicle.
How do you know my name?
Recognizing faces is part of my business. And how are you, Judge Adair? I thought you and Ace Daly were old political enemies. How nice to see that you've gotten together.
I think perhaps you'd better excuse us, Ace. Louise and I...
Sit down, Judge. I'll take care of White. He's just about to leave.
Don't mind if I do, now. You see, I came here looking for a story in the fight fix the other night. Oh, it's small potatoes compared to a political fix.
What does he mean, Ace?
You and Ace, the happy couple.
Well, really...
And maybe if Ace helps the judge to get reelected, he can claim the bride as his reward. What the story?
Ace, he mustn't print that. Not before election. He'd ruin everything.
Don't worry, Judge. He's not printing anything.
That's where you're wrong. I'm not only printing it, but I'm going to do a feature piece on it.
Don't push your luck too far. You're still healthy because nothing will happen to you in my place. Providing you're out of it in 5 minutes.
Just let me take him, Ace. Let me take him.
Without a rehearsal, champ. I thought you always rehearsed your fight.
Why, you little rat, I'll kill you if it's the last thing.
Look, champ, I don't have my hand in my pocket because it's cold. I told you the guy's my client.
Sit down, champ. As for you, Craig, put up the heater.
Hey, you've got to stop him. He mustn't print that. It would ruin us, all of us.
Don't worry, Louise. If he so much as hints at it in that rag of his, I'll not only be on the line of people who want to kill him, I'll be at the head of it.
As we weren't in any position to cop any popularity prizes at the moment, there didn't seem to be much point in hanging around the Casa Daily. We got out with about 2 minutes left of the head start Ace had given us. White insisted that I drop him off at the combination office and apartment where he worked. So I locked him in for the night, then headed for my own apartment and some long-delayed shut-eye. I didn't need anybody to rock me to sleep, as I was practically snoring by the time my head hit the pillow. So when the phone started to dance off its stand a couple of hours later, it took me a few minutes to locate it. Oh, stand still, will you? Yeah?
Now, White.
What time is it?
Oh, about 4:30.
Oh, it's the middle of the night.
Not for me. Either my office hours. Just finishing up tomorrow's column. I want to read you an item.
I can wait until tomorrow to read it. Hey, what's that?
Oh, the doorbell. Who is it? Hold the line a minute.
White, don't answer that. White, stay away from that. White! White!
Without stopping to think twice, I knew that whoever was paying that late call to Al White carried a peculiar calling card engraved in lead. I started dressing, made par for the course, and was headed for a cab in less than 6 minutes. A police cruiser outside of Al White's apartment house told me somebody else had heard the shots. When I finally got to his door, it was opened by Sergeant Marty Moran of Homicide.
Well, I might have known. What are you doing here?
White was my client.
Wise?
Don't let's get cute, Marty. I was talking to him on the phone when he got it.
Oh, that accounts for the phone being off the hook.
Do I get in?
I suppose so. What were you talking about when it happened?
He wanted to read me an item out of tomorrow's column.
Column? You didn't find any column, just a few blank sheets in the typewriter. No column. Well, there he is. We haven't moved him yet. Yemi hasn't gotten here.
Got it in the back, huh?
All five of them.
Hmm. Small caliber gun. 32 or less, I'd say.
Big enough to do the job.
Yeah. And you said there was no trace of a column?
No, just a few blank sheets of paper and his typewriter.
All right to handle?
Yeah, I guess so. Barry, what's on your mind?
Just a hunch. I'm wondering if Al White had the same habit most new triple boys have of jamming two or three sheets into their machine at a time.
Gee, you got something there. If he did, we may be able to bring out the impression on the second sheet.
Well, that's worth a try.
There should be some dusting powder in the lab kit. Yeah, here's some. Let's have that second sheet.
Here you are.
Think that's enough dusting powder on it? A little more, maybe. Shake it around. Well, what do you know? It worked.
Can you read it, Sergeant?
I think so. First, let's blow off the excess. Yep, there you are. Clear as a carbon copy.
Take your vows later. Uh-oh. Here it is. Listen. The mob is giggling over Ace Daly's payoff if the election goes right. Now, instead of fixing fights for sugar, the ace is fixing elections for honey.
Ace Daly in this?
Yeah. He told White that if that item appeared, he'd kill him.
Why didn't you say so? That makes it easy. We put out a pickup on Ace, and we got it made.
Better pick up Larry Slade, too, Marty.
The champ?
Yeah, he got into the act, too. He promised to kill White if he mentioned fixed fights again in his column.
Oh, fine. First I have no suspects, now I've got more than I have teeth of my own. How many other characters promised to make this creep a prospect for a headstone?
Offhand, I don't recall, but as I think of them, I'll keep you informed, Marty. I got away from Sergeant Moran as soon as I could. He was yelling pickup orders into the phone as I closed the door behind me. On the street, I grabbed a cab, told the cabbie to double back up a couple of streets to make sure there was no police trail on me, then gave the driver the address of the Adair home. It was an old converted brownstone house with a large brass knocker. Through the glass door, I saw the commoded figure of Louise Adair. Over her shoulder on the stairway, I could see her father, his white hair shining in the gloom.
What? What do you want?
I'd like to see you for a few minutes, Miss Adair.
Now? What about?
Murder.
Murder?
Yes, Al White, the columnist, a few hours ago.
I see. Perhaps you'd better come in.
What is it, Louise?
You go on to bed, Dad. This gentleman wants to ask me a few questions.
Maybe your father ought to sit in on this.
Leave my father out of it.
Nonsense, Louise. Now, what's this all about?
Al White, the columnist you met last night at Ace Daly's, is dead. Murdered.
And this gentleman, being a detective, has it figured out that Ace did it?
I didn't say that, Miss Adair. I said he had a motive. So did a lot of other people. You, for instance, or your father.
Ah.
Why not? If White printed that story about you and Ace, it might have cost your father the election.
But...
And it certainly wouldn't help your social standing.
Why, that's absurd. Ace and I were merely waiting for the proper time to announce our engagement.
After the election, I suppose, when it wouldn't be so embarrassing.
I can't have you making insinuations like that. I must ask you to leave.
Suit yourself, Judge. I was just trying to make it easy on you. White was my client.
And he's dead now.
Maybe so. But when a guy hires me to see that nothing happens to him and something does, I want the guy that made it happen.
But don't you see, we'll get dragged into it. The scandal will ruin Dad's chances of re-election.
That's unfair, Louise. How can we help?
Well, you can give me a fill-in on the time set up last night. What time did you leave the Casa Daly?
About 4. We came home and went right to bed.
4, huh? That would give Ace plenty of time to do the job. Was the champ there when you left?
Mr. Slade? No, he left before we did. His lady friend dances in one of the clubs.
Lily DeVore.
If you can call it dancing.
He saw her last night, huh? That might be his out.
My father and I'd like to get some sleep. If you have any more questions, would you mind if we discussed them later in some more suitable time and place?
All right. Let's say 4 o'clock this afternoon in my office. Meanwhile, I think I'll drop by the Carteret Arms and have a chat with Lily DeVore. The Carteret Arms was a big, expensive-looking pile of rocks in the West 50s. By the time I got there, a heavy drizzle had started, and it didn't pep me up any to learn that Lily hadn't gotten home yet. I found a soggy cigarette in my jacket pocket, got it burning, and settled back to wait. The gleaming wet face of a jeweler's clock across the street said 2:10 when a cab skidded to a stop at the curb. Lily DeVore jumped out, ran for the protection of the lobby. I gave her 10 minutes to get settled, then crossed over. It took a two-spot and a lot of fast talk to get by unannounced. The two-spot was more effective than the talk. Anyway, I got up to 4D and knocked.
Yeah?
Message for Miss DeVore.
Coming. Okay, Buster, let's have... Say, what is this?
I want a little talk with you.
Get your foot out of that door.
Nice of you to ask me in.
You mean I had a choice? Look, I don't know what's on your mind, but you don't...
Don't be so modest, Lily. You know you're irresistible.
Yeah, and I know something else, too. You're liable to be unconscious when the champ hears about this.
I make it a policy never to worry unnecessarily.
And I make it a policy never to entertain strange men without a warrant. That goes double for private cops. Outside.
Okay. I just thought I'd help keep your champ out of the hot seat. But if that's the way you feel about it...
Look, you can't pin that killing on Larry Slade. You know he didn't do it.
That's not what the police think. Where is he, Lily?
I don't know. Hey, where do you think you're going?
Oh, just to have a look around.
Get out of here and leave me alone.
What's in there? I thought I heard something. Oh, mice, no doubt.
That's just a closet. Stay away from it. Stay away, I tell you.
As I moved Lily from in front of the closet door, I turned my back for a second. The door swung open behind me. I heard rather than saw the blow that knocked me to my knees. In that moment, the man in the closet made a break for it. He headed across the room for the bedroom door beyond. I was a little groggy, but I managed to follow him. By the time I got to the bedroom, I heard him go through the window to the fire escape beyond. I followed, stuck my head out. He snapped a shot at me from below. Gouged a chunk of windowsill a foot or so from my head. I pulled back fast. I wasn't that curious. Lily was still in the living room when I walked back. Okay, baby. Playtime is over. I lose my boyish smile when people use my skull for target practice. Who was it?
I don't know. A prowler, I guess.
If it was Slade, why did he run? You can alibi him for last night, can't you?
Why, sure.
Or can you?
Of course I can. We were together all morning.
He left Daly's before 4. When did he get to your place?
About 4. We left the club together and then we...
You're lying, Lily, aren't you?
No!
If you are, I can check up at the club. You might as well admit it now.
Oh, all right. The director called a rehearsal on next week's show. Slade got bored and walked out on it about 4:15. We worked through.
In other words, he had time to knock off White. If he didn't do it, then why was he trying to hide here in your closet?
Slade wasn't in that closet.
Who was?
I don't know.
Who was it, Lily?
Oh, what's the use? Why should I cover for him? It was Ace Daly.
What was he doing here?
Same as you, looking for the champ.
To help him fix an alibi?
Slade doesn't need an alibi. He didn't do anything. Why don't you leave him alone?
Maybe I can help him. Where is he, Lily?
I told you I don't know, and I wouldn't tell you if I did.
That's what I thought. Just the same, if you want to see him get a break, you get to him and tell him to get to me. I didn't have long to wait. I'd just gotten back to the four walls and desk I laughingly call my office, shuffled the two ads and rent bill that represented my mail, and lit a cigarette when the phone rang. Hello?
Larry Slade. I hear you want to see me. What about you?
I don't do business over the phone. Come in and...
Yeah, and walk right into a police stakeout.
Okay, so I'll come to see you. Where?
If it's a plant, you'll never walk away from it.
Where?
The end of Pier 6, East River. Make it 3:30 sharp.
I'll be there.
And come alone. Because if you don't, you'll have plenty of company when you leave. They'll be carrying you.
Pier 6 was a deserted strip that stretched out into the murky water of East River for a quarter of a mile. Anybody walking to the end would be visible for minutes before he reached the end, setting him up as a perfect target. The goose pimples and icicles running down my spine were caused by the cold wind, I think. The rain hadn't let up, and I was drenched by the time I reached the end of the pier. Larry Slade stepped from behind an old rotting shack that had been a watchman's shanty. He looked bigger than a Brahma bull and twice as nasty. Hello, champ.
What do you want?
The one who killed Al White. The cops think maybe you did.
I can read.
I don't think you did.
That's nice, so?
Give yourself up. I don't want you to take the fall for the killer if you didn't do it.
I don't take any falls for nobody.
You're set up for one right now and don't know it.
You're lying.
Why should I? Ace Daly's the only one got anything to gain by lying.
He wouldn't cross me.
Not unless he needed a fall guy, and he does.
Why don't you tell him that? Hey, Ace.
Busy little man, aren't you, Craig? I tried to get around, only this time I didn't get around fast enough. Looks like you beat me to it, Ace.
Looks like I did.
He thinks you're trying to pin the murder on me, Ace.
Now, why would I want to do that, Larry? Why would I want to frame the guy who's giving me my alibi?
Your alibi? He hasn't even got one for himself. Not after he left Lily Duvall last night.
Oh, yes, he has. Larry came back to the Casa Daly. We were both there together at 4:30 this morning. Now, what do you say to that?
You've had time to cook up a nice little story, haven't you? But coming from the two principal suspects, I doubt if the police will take your word for it. You'll have to think of something better than that to prove you were really there.
Don't worry. We can. After he got home, Judge Adair called me up to talk things over.
That's funny. The judge didn't mention it to me. But then maybe you haven't had a chance to give him his briefing yet.
Don't worry, Craig. He'll back us up.
Will he, Ace? Aren't you forgetting something?
What?
You can't help him now. When the story of your little deal gets out and the papers tie it in with this murder, your support would be the kiss of death. His only chance of re-election now is to wash his hands of you as fast as he can and try to make hay on the other side.
Now, wait a minute.
Sorry, Ace, but I gotta go see the judge. Kind of like to hear what he has to say before he's had any coaching.
Stop him, Slade.
What do you want me to do?
You're the champ. Figure it out for yourself.
Larry Slade grinned, licked his lips. He hunched his left shoulder a bit. And I saw the punch start somewhere near the tip of his shoe, but I couldn't get my jaw out of the way fast enough. It landed like a ton of bricks, and the pier came up and slapped me in the face. I don't know how long I was out. Could have been minutes, probably. It was only seconds. Both Ace and Slade were gone when I opened my eyes. I couldn't find it in my heart to regret their going. All I could do was hope that they were going to the wrong place if they wanted to locate Judge Adair. I managed to get a cab and gave the driver my office address. When I got there, two people were at my door trying the knob. Even in the semi-gloom, I had no difficulty making out the sleek lines of Louise Adair as one. The other was her father. Looking for me?
Oh!
I thought you'd forgotten our 4 o'clock appointment. I've thought of something you should know.
Good. Let's go inside where we can talk. Make yourselves comfortable.
I suppose we really should have told the police that Dad preferred to talk to you first.
Well, let's have it.
I think I know who killed your client.
I thought you might. Judge Adair, after you and your daughter got home this morning, did you phone the Casa Daily?
Why, how did you know about that?
Then you did make the call.
Why, yes, about 4:30.
Well, there goes the old ball game. I thought that Ace was lying.
But Ace wasn't there. No one answered the phone.
He didn't? Why didn't you tell me that this morning?
Well, Dad didn't want to get involved. It would cost him the election.
Cost a man his life.
I finally realized too late. When Daly tried to reach me today...
I see I got here just in time.
Ace!
No, don't shoot, Daly. I won't tell anything. Don't...
Boy, you dirty double-crossing old buzzard.
He's got a gun, Dad!
When the smoke cleared, Ace Daly was sprawled in my doorway. Louise Adair was doing a good job of trying to swallow her fist. The judge stood dazed, staring down at an old .22 target pistol that he still held in his hand. I managed to pin my eyeballs back in their sockets long enough to walk over to Ace. At that moment, the door to my office burst open and Sergeant Marty Moran came tearing in.
What's going on here? Holy cow, Ace Daly, who did it?
I'm afraid I did, Sergeant.
It was self-defense. Daly was going to kill both of us. Mr.
Judge shot him, all right.
Why should Daly want to kill you, Judge?
He wanted to keep me quiet. I knew that he'd killed Mr. White.
You were taking an awful chance going up against a pro like Daly with that pea shooter.
I couldn't keep quiet and see him get away with murder. Even if it does cost me the election, I couldn't do it.
Cost you the election? You kidding? You come out of this mess a hero. Delivered a killer all wrapped up. Just too bad Ace Daly didn't kill White.
Didn't kill him?
What do you mean?
Yeah, you better translate that for me, too, Barry.
Daly couldn't have killed White. I was talking to White when the killer knocked. He got up and let him into the apartment.
So?
He wouldn't hire me to hold his hand while he was talking to Daly in a public place, then let him into his apartment.
But Ace could have disguised his voice.
Won't wash, baby. White was shot in the back. That means he opened the door to the killer, then turned to lead the way into the apartment. He never would have turned his back on Daly.
In that case, I have a little surprise for you. Ryan, bring Slade in. We picked up Slade waiting outside in Daly's car.
Ace, who did it? I'm afraid I did, Mr. Slade. I thought he killed White.
Which leaves us only one logical suspect.
Oh, I get it. I'm supposed to be the fall guy, eh? Why, you two-bit Seamus, I'm going to let you have it.
Right in the whiskers. You KO'd the champ.
I owed him, that's it. Holy cow, so I did. Hey, he didn't throw that fight. He's got a glass jaw.
Well, I'll get him out of here and booked.
He didn't kill White either. He never would have used a gun. You'd get a bigger charge out of beating him to a pulp.
Well, if neither of them did kill White, who...
You did, Judge.
What?
And that wasn't self-defense when you shot Ace Daly in my office. It was murder.
That's fantastic. Why should my father kill either of them?
Because White was getting set to break a story that would have blasted your father's chances. Ace knew your father killed him and covered him for your sake. But your father knew when the heat was on, Daly would throw him to the wolves.
But to go up against Daly with a .22...
Ace was a sitting duck. The judge shot him before he knew he was being double-crossed, using me as a witness that it was self-defense.
Now, see here. This is ridiculous. I was in bed when White was killed.
Sorry, Judge. I went to your house an hour or more after the killing. You were supposed to be in bed, but your hair wasn't even mussed.
Oh, I won't listen to these lies. Tell them, Dad. Tell them.
What's the use, Louise? I took a long chance and lost. I killed them.
Well, they can't prove a thing.
Yes, they can, now that they know the story.
I left too many traces.
Why did you kill White, Judge?
I had to. My only hope of escaping prosecution for malfeasance was to be re-elected to cover what I had done during my last term. I would have done anything to be re-elected. Even come to blows with a thug like Daly.
Don't talk, Dad. They can't prove a thing.
It's no use, my dear. I'm ready to make a full statement.
Okay, boys, take the judge out. We'll book him later. For murder, I guess. Barry? Well, we're waiting for the medical examiner. Tell me...
Not now, Marty. I've got an important date.
Anybody I know?
Lily DeVore.
You crazy? That's the champ's girl. He's plenty jealous.
Plenty jealous, but I just found out he's got a glass jaw. So long, Marty. So long, folks. See you next week.
You have just heard Barry Craig, confidential investigator, starring William Gargan. Next week, another exciting transcribed story starring America's number one detective, William Gargan, as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's script was written by Frank Kane and featured Santos Ortega as Ace Daly. Edward King directed. Your announcer is Don Pardo. Names and places mentioned in this program are fictitious, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
From October of 1951, there's Barry Craig, confidential investigator with The Gossip Columnist. In a moment, we'll enjoy more adventure with Detective Charlie Chan in Eye of the Buddha Ruby as this edition of Yesteryear continues. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts. Charlie Chan, the famous Chinese detective, first came to NBC Blue in December of 1932 in a Friday night series sponsored by Esso, starring Walter Connolly in the title role. The half-hour program folded in May of 1933, but the character was revived in October of 37 for a nightly 15-minute serialized program on Mutual. That ended in October of 1938. Chan resurfaced yet again on ABC in June of 1944 with Ed Begley as the Ryrie Oriental Police Inspector and Leon Janney as Number One Son. In August of 1947, Chan moved to Mutual in a 30-minute Monday series for Pharmaco. The program series ended in June of 1948. Here now, from sometime in 1945, is Charlie Chan in Eye of the Buddha Ruby, another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
The Adventures of Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan has gone from Honolulu to the island of Maui in pursuit of Morton Rand, head of the notorious international syndicate, who has stolen a magnificent ruby, the Eye of Buddha, from Timothy Eden, millionaire jewel merchant of San Francisco. Rand is hiding out on the cattle ranch of Malcolm Boyd, another leader of the gang, and as neither Boyd nor Rand know Charlie Chan by sight, he believes himself comparatively safe in his disguise as Ah Kim, a Chinese cook. But Chan is recognized by Whitey Burke, one of Rand's henchmen.
Ah Kim, nothing, he's Charlie Chan.
Before Charlie can make a move, Boyd covers him with a gun.
Reach for the ceiling, quick!
What's the matter, boss? Me no understand.
But you will understand before we're finished. Tie him up, Whitey.
What'll I use?
Anything, you fool. Your belt, that sash around his waist. Work fast.
Okay, boss. Keep him covered, Boyd.
Don't worry, Whitey.
Yeah, now. Now search him.
Let me take care of that. Here you are. A .45 up his sleeve.
How fortunate. When they find you, Inspector, it will be with your hand clutched round your own gun, and with powder marks on your forehead. We must see to it, Whitey, that the shot is fired at close range. A clear case of suicide, they'll say. And we shall try to think of it that way. And then our consciences will be clear, because we didn't have anything to do with it. Did we, boy?
Oh, what's the use of all that chatter? Let me slip it to him now and get it over with.
That, my dear Boyd, is your greatest trouble. You're inclined to hasty action without sufficient forethought. Don't you agree with me, Inspector Chan?
Regret exceedingly inability to do so. When jig is up, why tire feet with additional dancing?
Well, there may be something in what you say. Well, Boyd, if you insist.
Hey, wait a minute.
What is it?
The real cook, Sing Wong. If he palmed Chan off on us as his cousin, that means
he's
that he...
on to it, too. Come on. Come on, Boyd, we'll see.
Look, there goes Sing Wong now. But we'll get him.
Whitey, watch Charlie Chan. If you let him get away,
I'll... He won't get away.
Come on, Boyd.
Good luck, Boyd. Well, Mr. R. Kim, you've certainly cooked up a fine mess for yourself this time.
Regretfully compelled to admit truth of statement. Originally planned to confine culinary activities to everyday articles of diet. Instead, seem to have cooked own goose.
I'll say you have. Just as soon as they knock over that slant-eyed pal of yours, Boyd and the boss will be back here, and then... Well, them felt slippers you're wearing look nice, but I wouldn't want to be in them.
Appreciate your solicitude, but wish to quote to you from writings of great Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu, who tells that many who send regrets to sick man will die before he does.
It's no use, Charlie. You're pow and you know it. But if it makes you any happier to pull a lot of them Chinese proverbs out of your head...
Mr. Whitey... Have you ever seen men hang?
Huh?
I repeat, have you ever seen men hanged?
No. Why?
I did, once.
What's that got to do with it?
It was most unhappy experience. One which I have tried very hard to erase from memory. Unfortunately, cannot do so.
Yeah? What do you mean?
Guards come to cell of condemned man who has spent terror-haunted night listening to crash of testing gallows. They bring priests to administer last rites and spiritual consolation. Then begin slow walk down corridor and into prison yard where a scaffold stands.
All right. Never mind the rest of it.
Unfortunate wretch I saw was in truly pitiful plight. Nerve was completely gone.
He lost his nerve, huh?
Guards were compelled to carry him, gibbering like idiots, between them, down corridor, across prison yard, and up steps leading to scaffold, where hangman awaited.
The hangman?
Cap is placed overhead. Priest whispers last few words, then noose is adjusted.
Cut it, Chan. Cut it, I tell you.
If you have never seen hanging, Mr. Whitey, then you have never seen hangman's noose.
Noose?
Hangman's noose with its strange knot made of 8 heavy coils.
Yeah? What's that for?
When trap is sprung, an unhappy sinner makes final atonement. Knot is designed to strike behind the ear and break neck, bringing merciful relief of quick death.
Quick, eh?
Unfortunately, same not always occurring. Hangman bungle job on execution, eyewitness.
Huh?
Poor wretch dangle there, slowly strangling to death.
Strangling?
Face distorted with agony. Limbs twitching.
Cut it, I tell you, Charlie, I can't stand it, I can't.
Brave man does not fear death, Mr. Whitey.
Oh.
But hanging our most terrible end of all, and that are what most inevitably befall you.
No.
Unless you assist me now. If you do so, guarantee you lightest penalty for all past misdeeds.
Yeah?
But if I die, they must come when you and Mr. Morton Rand and Mr. Boyd must pay. And pay as I have described, on gallows.
No, not hanging. Not that. I can't. Here. Let me cut them things that's tying you.
That is infinitely better. Only animal who has known relentless grip of trap truly appreciates freedom.
Come on, we gotta get going, Charlie. If they get back before we're...
You first return to me revolver, which Mr. Boyd has so ignominiously removed.
Here you are. Now let's blow.
Must humbly decline to do so.
Huh?
Suggest same as exceedingly wise course of conduct for you, Mr. Whitey. Secure boat. Return to Honolulu. I shall meet you there at my office 3 days from today at 10 o'clock in morning. Unless my plans miscarry.
Your plans? What are you going to do?
Intend to remain here and prepare happy surprise for Mr. Morton Rand and Mr. Boyd upon their return.
Blast Singwar's eyes. He was just lucky enough to grab the fastest horse at the hitching rack. That's how he got away.
Call it luck if you want to, my dear Boyd. I attribute it to Oriental wisdom. Wisdom which is far deeper than ours.
Yeah, well, if you ask me, Charlie Chan wasn't so all far and wise.
Charlie Chan is brave to the point of being foolhardy. A quality which can be very disastrous to its possessor, as he has now learned.
Yeah, you said it.
But don't underestimate his capabilities, Boyd. I'm not what you might call a nervous man. But I'm going to sleep a lot easier at night when I know that Charlie Chan is finally and definitely disposed of.
Disposed of? That's certainly a neat way of putting it. Say, how are you going to handle it?
As the saying goes, with neatness and dispatch. One deftly placed bullet, a nice clean getaway, and then...
All them places you was telling me about, huh?
And more besides.
Say, how much you figure that eye of Buddha Ruby is worth, anyway?
What we can get for it.
Yeah, but how much is that in cash?
That all depends on how badly somebody wants it. And I have an idea that our good friend Mr. Eden wants it very badly indeed.
That's a hot one. Selling Eden his own property back. I'd never have figured out that angle.
As a matter of fact, the thought just came to me. Why should we go seeking a market when we have a buyer right at hand?
I gotta hand it to you, Wren. You got plenty of brains.
And I use them.
Well, here we are. Whoa, boy. Whoa, there. Here, let me take your horse. I'll tie him up at the hitching rack and then...
Wait a minute. Don't dismount.
What's the matter?
How many horses were at the rack when we started after Singwa?
Well, let me see now. I think there was four.
Yes?
A roan and a sorrel and a pinto.
Well,
and...
only three now. The sorrel is gone.
Hey, that's the horse Burke was using.
There's something up, Boyd. If Whitey has double-crossed us, I...
Look! Over there in the doorway. Charlie Chan!
How do you do, gentlemen? Unfortunately, Mr. Whitey called away upon important business, so I am compelled to receive you single-handed. Please dismount. Quickly, but moving carefully. I have exceedingly nervous trigger fingers.
Why, you dirty...
Sorry for poor Mr. Malcolm Boyd. Should not have tried to draw guns. You will please dismount?
With pleasure, Mr. Chan.
Get here, boy. Huh?
Oh, no. No, you're...
Better luck next time, Colin.
Sorry to have missed you, Mr. Rand. But you may rest assured there will be a next time.
So Charlie Chan's perilous visit to the island of Maui was all in vain. For once again, Morton Rand has escaped the avenging hand of the law.
When we come back, part two of Charlie Chan in Eye of the Buddha Ruby, as this edition of Yesteryear continues. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Thank you.
Adventures of Charlie Chan. In an effort to recover a magnificent ruby known as the Eye of Buddha from Morton Rand, who has stolen it from wealthy Timothy Eden, Charlie Chan tracks Rand from Honolulu to his hideout at the cattle ranch of Malcolm Boyd on the island of Maui. Disguised as Ah Kim, a Chinese cook, Chan hopes to regain possession of the stone and slip away undetected. But he is recognized, captured, and left under guard. Regaining his freedom by a trick, he tries to arrest Rand and Boyd. In the fight which follows, Boyd is badly wounded, but Rand escapes. As our scene opens, Chan is kneeling beside Boyd, who is just regaining consciousness.
So sorry it were necessary to get you, Mr. Boyd, instead of Morton Rand. Happy to inform, however, that investigation disclosed damage to be comparatively unimportant. Mere wound in shoulder, which with proper care will soon heal.
Well, you got me, Chan. Now what are you going to do with me?
After I have completed dressing wound, we shall return to Honolulu. There, I am afraid, you will have to answer for wrongdoings.
You're not going to take me like this, are you?
Reluctantly compelled to do so.
But I can't...
Did contemplate remaining in attempt to track down Mr. Morton Rand, but now realize that there are infinitely subtler ways of accomplishing same. Therefore, must leave this unwholesome vicinity with all possible speed. There. Wound temporarily taken care of, with necessary apologies for strictly amateur surgery. Now, must request your cooperation in putting you into saddle.
Chan, you can't do this to me.
Not only can, but will.
But listen, now...
Unless cooperation is instantly forthcoming, we'll be reluctantly compelled to use sterner methods.
Okay. You win.
Put a foot in
there. Take it easy.
Now other foot. Now that that arc accomplished, comes still greater task. Must now, completely unaided, manage to hoist my unwieldy bulk into saddle of unfortunate horse. Hey, there are times when I feel certain I have select wrong profession. Energy expended equal to toiling for a full day with pick and shovel. Now, Mr. Boyd, please, start your horse in direction of town.
Get up.
You and I have important engagement in Honolulu.
Meanwhile, Commissioner Williams has been a dinner guest at the home of Timothy Eden on the beach at Waikiki. And now, as they linger over their coffee, there is much discussion concerning the outcome of Charlie Chan's perilous visit to the island ranch of Malcolm Boyd.
I have the most awful premonition, a feeling that something terrible is wrong.
Nonsense, Nancy.
Just the same, I tell you...
You don't mean you're losing faith in Chan.
No, but I don't see how you can possibly...
I've worked side by side with Inspector Chan for years, Miss Adams, and I've never seen a nervier man in an emergency. Or a cooler one.
But one man, single-handed, against a gang like that. Oh, you shouldn't have let him go, Inspector.
You don't know Charlie, Miss Adams. He has his own way, or else. If I'd forbidden him to go, he'd have resigned from the department and gone on his own hook. And when he came back...
You say when he came back. But what you really mean is if he came back.
Nancy, I don't see why you take such a pessimistic attitude.
Neither do I.
I promise you this much, Miss Adams. If anything's happened to Charlie, I'll make Morton Rand and Boyd and his entire outfit awfully hard to find.
And I'll promise you something, Commissioner. If you don't, I'll charter a plane myself and bomb that whole crooked crew right off the face of the earth.
Hear that, Danny? And that's the girl you're trying so desperately to marry.
You can laugh if you want, but I'm thinking more of Charlie. After all, he is a married man with a wife and 10 children.
11, Miss Adams.
Oh,
well, that reminds me, Mr. Eden.
Yes, Commissioner?
Just before I left my office, I had a call from Lee Chan.
The youngster that was with us at the Maritime Hotel?
That's the one. He's Charlie's oldest boy. And he's as bright as a steel trap. Said he had to see me. I didn't want to delay your dinner, Mr. Eden, so I told him to meet me here. I wouldn't have done it except that he insisted it was important, and that it had something to do with your jewel, the Eye of Buddha.
Well, I'm glad you did, Commissioner. Of course, you can understand how anxious I am to get the stone back.
I certainly can, sir.
I told you some of the things that have happened to me since owning the ruby. Well, I had a cable from the mainland today.
Was it bad news, Daddy Eden?
Harvey James is seriously ill.
Uncle Harvey? Why didn't you tell me, Daddy Eden?
I didn't want to worry you, dear.
What's the matter with him, sir?
Once again, the doctors are fumbling in the dark. They don't know. He just grows weaker and weaker. And they're afraid they can't save him.
Oh, no.
Who is this Harvey James, Mr. Eden?
My oldest and most trusted employee. He's been the general manager of Eden and Company for many, many years. I don't know what I'd do without him.
Supposing for a moment that there is something in this story about the curse that's supposed to follow the jewel, why should it strike at him?
Strangely enough, Harvey was the man who began the negotiations which led to its final purchase.
Excuse, please, but Mr. Lee Chan here to see Commissioner Williams.
No reason why I shouldn't talk to him right here, is there, Mr. Eden?
None at all. Show him in, Mondo.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't it be strange if Chan had taken his life into his hands all for nothing?
What do you mean, Danny?
Well, it's just possible, you know, that he's on a wild goose chase. Maybe the jewel isn't where he thinks it is.
Things like that happen every day in our business, Mr. Rand. We get a hot tip, travel 1,000 miles to track it down, and while you're doing it...
Mr. Lee Chan.
Oh, come in, Lee. Glad to see you.
Hello, Commissioner.
You know Miss Nancy Adams.
How do you do?
And Mr. Eden and Mr. Dennis Rand, don't you?
Oh, sure. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Well, Lee, what's it all about? You sounded pretty excited when you called me.
I got a line on a guy that knows plenty about the ruby, Commissioner.
Where did you get it?
Well, sir, I was in... Well, in a place this afternoon.
What sort of place?
Oh, just, you know, Commissioner, just a place.
I'm waiting, Lee.
Well, sir, I was playing pool in Foo Wong's joint. I mean place.
I thought your father told you not to play pool.
Well, he did, kinda.
And I also thought he told you to stay away from places like Foo Wong's.
Yeah, but don't you see, Commissioner, if I hadn't gone there, I'd have never found the Eye of Buddha.
You found the jewel?
Well, not exactly, but I know who's got it.
You do?
And that ain't all. I know where he lives.
Nice work, kid.
All right, Lee. Spill it.
Well, I was playing pool with Jimmy Young and Harry Key and a couple other fellas when a funny-looking gink comes in and starts talking to Foo Wong.
What do you mean, funny looking?
Well, he was big and fat with an awful red face, and he had a derby hat tilted down over one eye, and he was smoking a cigar. The moment I look at him, I know there's something phony about him, so I don't say anything to the fellas, but I just put up my cue and ease over to where I can hear what they're saying.
And what were they saying?
The big guy stalls around for a couple of minutes, and then he tells Foo Wong that he's a pal of Marty Harris, and that Marty Harris has told him that Foo Wong is the right guy.
Oh.
Foo Wong never tips his mitt, he just listens. And pretty soon this bird comes right out in the open.
Yes?
He asks Foo Wong if he can wise him up to where he can get rid of a hot hunk of jewelry. Foo Wong says what kind of jewelry, and the gink tells him a ruby.
Wonderful.
Yes? Yes, and then what happened?
Foo Wong is still playing dumb, see? So he tells this bird that maybe he can do something and maybe can't. And where can he reach him if he wants to talk to him? So the gink tells him his name and where he's living.
Could you hear what he said?
I sure could, Mr. Eden. His name is Dan Marvin, and he's living at the Maritime Hotel.
Uh-oh.
That awful place again.
What do we do now, Commissioner?
Excuse, please. Inspector Chan is here.
Charlie!
Good.
Well, now we'll get someone.
Bring the inspector right in, Mondo.
Yes, sir.
You see, Nancy, what a lot of time you wasted worrying.
You don't ever have to worry about my pop, Miss Adams. He's the antelope's adnoid.
Return of unworthy self calls for such extreme jubilation.
Where mighty glad to
see you. Hello, Inspector.
Hello, Inspector. What luck?
Before narrating tale of journey, must first inquire reason for presence here of my insignificant number one son, Lee Chan.
Lee's just brought us some great news, Inspector.
The gods have method of their own of balancing scales. News which I bring are most unhappy. Mr. Morton Rand have escaped.
Don't let it worry you, Pop. We've located the ruby.
Permit me to inquire where.
Lee says there's a man at the Maritime Hotel trying to dispose of a hot stone.
Who is this man, please?
His name is Dan Marvin, Pop.
Same are not familiar to me.
Well, we'll find out soon enough who he is. But now tell us something about yourself, Charlie.
Wait a moment. Have you had your dinner yet, Inspector?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, Inspector Chan, how thoughtless of us. You must let me get you something.
I'm most grateful for gracious offer of hospitality, but I am compelled to reject same. Do not wish to interrupt joyful social evening, but must suggest we pay immediate visit to Mr. Dan Marvin at Maritime Hotel.
Again, the trail leads to the Maritime Hotel. First, Deacon Jessup, then Morton Rand, and now Dan Marvin. all connected with this sinister spot. Through his son, Lee, it looks as though Charlie Chan is really on the hot trail of the jewel.
From sometime around 1945, there was Charlie Chan with Eye of the Buddha Ruby. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Yesteryear. Tune in again next week at this time and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. So till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, do, dio, do. Radio, I miss you.
KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District. Online at kcea.org, the home of the Big Band.
Honey, won't you hold me? Hold me. Never let me go. Take me. Honey, won't you take me? Never to forsake me. 'Cause I love you so. Thrill me. Let your kisses thrill me. Just like you alone can do. Hold me tenderly, enfold me. Never try to hold me from you.
The greatest songs by the greatest artists? We do. Big Band 89.1 KCEA. Online at kcea.org. The home of the big bands.
Thank you.
under the apple tree with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me.
No, 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 don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
Don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me.
Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, 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 don't go walking down Lover's Lane with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
I just got word from a guy who heard from the guy next door to me. The girl he met just loves to bet, and it fits you to a T. So
don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me till I come marching home.
To anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Watch the girls on the foreign shores. You'll have to report to me when you come marching home. Don't hold anyone on your knee. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. You better be true to me. Don't hold anyone on your knee, you'll get the third degree when you come marching home. You're on your own where there is no phone and I can't keep tab on you. Be fair to me, I'll guarantee this is one thing that I'll do. I won't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but you till you
with anyone else but me. I know the apple tree is reserved for you and me, and I'll be true till you come marching home.
Thank you.
I can be good or I can be bad. It all depends on you. I can be lonely out in a crowd. I can be humble, I can be proud. It all depends on you. I can save money or spend it, go right on living, or rent if you're to blame, honey, for what I do. I know that I can be beggar, I can be king, I can be almost any old thing. It all depends on you.
Mystery, excitement, and intrigue you want.
Suspense.
Hi, this is Craig Roberts, host of Yesteryear, the best of the golden age of radio, where
we offer you escape.
Every Monday night at 9, join us as we escape to the golden age of radio.
The Whistler.
Now, gangbusters.
Yesteryear, Monday nights at 9 on 89.1 KCEA.
Thank you.
are you? Where have you gone without me? I thought you cared about me. Where are you? Where's my heart? Where is the dream we started? I can't believe we're parted. Where are you? When we said goodbye, love, what had we to gain? When I gave you my love, was it all in vain? All life through, must I go on pretending? Where is my happy ending?